Session number 8277.
Mr. Calloway, Reel 5.
Yeah.
Could you tell me a little about the actual fighting with the Turks during this period?
Yes, well, the we more or less kept up a sort of a daily hate bout, just to keep things going, as you might say. But the one problem was conserving ammunition. It wasn't a sort of a matter of going wild with it all. We had no idea when we could be relieved, and we had to conserve ammunition quite a bit. But the Turks were more or less in the same boat, because they'd stretched themselves by racing from Gallipoli down to try and hold us, as far as I know, and so they weren't in a much better position.
About how many rounds would be fired in a daily hate, is it?
Well, it would vary. We weren't out to waste it. You might go days and quiet, nobody fired anything, but just occasionally. Of course, night time was the time to give a bit of a shake-up too, just to pretend that there was going to be a do, you know what I mean. But that's how it happened. And of course, the situation was not, you couldn't foresee what was going to happen. There wasn't sufficient build-up down below us to know when we could expect to be relieved. And it all took time. And the Turks themselves were not too ready to try and break through at once, because they hadn't the forces there to put it through, I don't think.
Were there any big Turkish attacks?
Oh, yes. They broke into the fort. They got into the fort, but they never got out again, because they dropped one of the walls, which was a great shock.
Did you see any of this, or did you?
No,
just
it was
hear
all
about it?
All happened at night. Well, we could hear it all going on where we were, but I mean the infantry and people up in the fort. I know we had to send a section of guns up to the fort that night to help out. But there were no roads or anything around that place. It was just a matter of open desert. And as far as after the palm grove, it was complete plain desert, you see. The palm grove, I suppose, was about half a mile deep along the river bank. That's all. But no, it was a matter of remaining dug in and just shaking up things periodically.
Did you ever feel that the Turks could break in, or were you confident you could keep them out?
No, I think we were fairly confident that they had. You see, they were more concerned with passing forces through. Now, that's where the fort came in. We were able to just flick the end of them as they were passing by to build up down below us, you see.
You could just catch the
side. Yes, if they just give them a shaking a bit. But most of it happened at night, of course. And in daytime, we could still see movement.
Was there a lot of sniping?
Oh, yes. Sniping was the one thing that was deadly. Absolutely deadly. I mean, you just put up a fag card, you might as well say, and it was... Oh, got it. But that was for the infantry mainly, and the gunners, who were in trenches behind the guns, you see, and billets, dug in the ground, of course.
Did you lose many casualties in the battery to sniper?
No, we hadn't very many casualties at all. We were lucky. But, as I say, one had to be very, very careful not to expose. And I used to go up to the battery from the, what we call, I went up from the wagon line to the gun line. That is the correct term. Each day with the casualty returns for down our area. That was one of my jobs. And I would, of course, pass the wounded being brought in, any that happened during the night, usually.
Besides that duty, what other sort of daily
there was
routines
nothing, there were,
did you?
Just managing the horses, that's all. But that was a sort of, I don't know what you could call it, a degenerating effort, because the horses had nothing to eat except palm stems and what have you. And we couldn't exercise them. We started in the first place to exercise, and that threw up a cloud of dust from the traffic of them, you see, the horses. And so that was given up. And then eventually, of course, they became so weak that they couldn't be walked around. And then after a period, so many were taken each day for slaughter.
When did the health of the actual men start to decline?
Well, you see, it's an extraordinary thing. You couldn't say there was a breakdown of health, generally. Dysentery was the biggest problem. But apart from that, I mean, we seem to remain fairly normal. And not as fit as we should be, of course. But there was no real debility in general, you know what I mean?
Did sanitation break down at all?
Well, that was just kept going by fresh trenches every day. There was no other means, that was the only one. Originally we used to burn, you see, but that became impossible because we had nothing to burn it with.
So you just dug trenches?
Yes, and covered up. And it's the same with the burial of the dead. There was one area which was walled off, mud walls, and that was used as a cemetery. And mostly, I suppose they sorted it all out afterwards, because I've seen pictures which show that they were all buried or removed into the palms, under the palms somewhere. At least some palms have grown since then.
So you feel sanitation never actually broke down?
No. No, it was fairly well maintained, because we couldn't do otherwise in our own interests because of flies and what have you.
Did the Arab population
they were given the option of clearing out when we first set foot there. And while many of them went, there was still a lot in the town, but they suffered some casualties at odd times. But the Turks were very careful not to shell that part of the town.
Did you see much of the Arab population?
No, very little.
So you were segregated?
Yes, and we weren't encouraged to be involved with them, actually. I've no doubt that some of them were helping with our supply and that sort of thing in the town for labour, as it was necessary.
Do you remember any airdrops of supplies?
Yes. It was quite a joke. Of course, we only had these monoplanes, and that's what they... wings, you know what I mean? Not built like they are today. And the poor chaps used to come over and drop it over. I mean, nothing was prepared. And... one thing they were asked to drop was money, rupees, so that we could spend it in the bazaar, you see. The Arabs would take it. And sometimes they miscalculated and dropped it in the wrong place. But many chaps had bent rupees, which were some of those that were dropped, which was quite a curio. And they dropped medical supplies, some of that. But there again, of course, everything was so close that once the drop was located, you had to leave it till night time before you go and get it. It wasn't successful, really.
You didn't feel it made a valuable contribution?
It made no contribution to the living. It helped from the medical point of view, and the other was, as I say, they dropped the money, silver.
Did the medical... situation declined?
Yes, it was in a very bad way for drugs, pain-killing drugs and what have you, that sort of thing. And that's where they tried to help, but I mean, I don't suppose they could do very much, because you can't drop those sort of things about. I mean, there'd been no experience of it in those days. I mean, after all, we never had any aeroplanes.
Did you see anything of the battles to try and break to relieve Kut? What could you see of them?
Well, they mostly took place at night.
So all you'd see is the gun flashes then?
Yes, that's right, yes. And keep undercover. Yeah.
Did you ever feel that the Kut garrison should have taken part in these battles, should have made some effort at diverting Turkish attention from them?
That's one thing that a lot of people argued, whether we should have gone out and had a crack at those who were trying to pass down to the what's name. But you see, the trouble was movement. We had no means of transport for the sick and wounded. And we would have to abandon them. And then again, I mean, once we got out of our holes, as it were, we couldn't afford to maneuver much. And there was... the people weren't fit enough to march anywhere. And I think holding on was the only thing we could have done. Well, I don't know, myself, without any knowledge of the situation, I don't know why we stopped there at all. We literally bottled ourselves up. Because it sounded all right from a point of view of holding out. But having got so far, we could have gone back to the second line, which was to become the final defending line, or the main line to take Kut again. I think, anyway, that's a matter for generals, isn't it?
You felt that at the time, did you, at all?
Well, I won't say at the time, but since then, considering it all, after all, we did 90 miles in about 36 hours, perhaps, less than that. And that was some moving for infantry to walk. And we could have rested. And you see, they weren't following us in any great numbers. And if we'd stepped back to where our second line was eventually, that is the relieving force, I think we could have made a better stand.
Once bottled up in there,
there was no hope.
When did you realise that the garrison was going to have to surrender? When did that become apparent?
Oh, once the rations began to dwindle and we were down to 4 ounces of bread and things like that, and finally, of course, none. That was when we realised that something was going to happen. And frankly, we were fed up. We'd had enough. Everybody was hungry and not overfit, but we had no idea that we were having going to very well march so far away.
So there was no real objection to the idea of the surrender by this time?
Well, we accepted our commander's view of the whole thing. They tried, they set up two efforts to relieve us and failed, which was the big shock, because that's another thing, of course, when they were attacking, looking at it from the situation now, we might have gone out and had a crack at them from the back, but we would have lost our last name, you see. It's difficult to know what the situation, how we could have managed, but we were lacking transport and that sort of thing. So it would have been a matter of how far people could walk or get. But the generals, of course, must have sorted this thing out, otherwise they would have tried to do that, I'm sure.
What was your first news of the surrender?
Well, I think about a week or 10 days before that we were... having the last, I think it was the 8th of March, was when the last effort failed to relieve us. And then we were put in the picture that it couldn't be set up again for so long and we couldn't hold out, so therefore we would have to surrender.
Did you make any preparations yourself for your period in captivity? Did you sort of try and get yourself with a sort of survival kit of sorts?
No, we just had the clothes we stood up in and anything we could carry. That was the situation. We had nothing else. No money.
So you didn't really have the sort of means to set up a survival kit?
No, we'd get nothing left at all, you see, from that point of view.
What actually happened then?
Well, then the surrender came, certain formalities were carried out, the flag was hauled down and the Turks took over, and then their parties came in to the different units. First we knew was an officer came over the gun pit with a flashing a sword and going mad, and we were all told to fall in, and then we were marched away.
Had you taken any measures to destroy the guns? Or make
oh, yes, yes. Yes, one of ours, we blew to bits nearly. It was too heavy a charge. It was the first one they experimented on. But we certainly fixed them all right. And so they held that against us, of course.
What about the horses? Were the rest of them slaughtered? Or
they were slaughtered, yes. Well, slaughtering was carried out for a long time before we actually surrendered, because we couldn't feed them, you see. And we were destroying horses, so many a day, for some time.
So you tried to destroy anything that would have been any use
any
to
use
the
to, yeah. Yes, that was certain.
What? So you said this captain came over and made you fall in?
Yeah, well,
Turkish
he was an officer, yes. Got us all together, and that's the first we knew that they were there. We seemed to be hanging around for ages before anybody came. And our own officers, the colonel came and told us all to look after ourselves, and sorry it was that it was happening, but to, what did he say, look after your clothes. That was it, because they would take your clothes, you see, for anything wearable, and to look after your health as far as possible, which was very nice to say, but he bid us goodbye and told us that we would have to march a long way, which we did, and that's the last we saw of them. They all went off. The officers were withdrawn, and we marched in columns of lumps, as you might say, down to the centre by the river, and from there on we were partied up and marched to us about 6 miles out into an area.
How did you feel about being separated from your officers?
Well, we'd no call. It was just done. Sergeant Majors took over.
Were you, at this early stage, were the Turks quite civil to you? Or?
Well, we didn't see much of them. I mean, just except for parties bringing in these horrible biscuits, which they did after 24 hours. We had nothing from them for 24 hours. And then they shot these horrible biscuits, God knows what they were made of, like iron, and they poured them off the camels onto the blooming sand, and we had to get on with so much each. And that was the sort of thing we seemed to have for days.
I presume you didn't object to the taste due to your...
God, terrible they were. I had to soak them in water. You couldn't eat them, that is to say, to bite them. Rock hard they were.
So where you were moved off in parties. What was your first destination?
Well, in stages of about 15 or 20 miles. And there was 90 miles to cover to Baghdad. And after several days, I was not too fit, and I managed to get pulled off and put on a boat that was going through to Baghdad. So I was lucky there.
What were you suffering from, by the
way? Tummy trouble, dysentery, you see, lots of things. And a lot of fellas, too, had the same thing. And, of course, eventually we were broken up in numbers all over the place. Units were not kept together or anything. It was just parties of all sorts.
About how big were these parties?
Oh, they varied. Some maybe 100 or 50 or whatever. But it was pretty rough. And then at Baghdad, I was there for about 10 days in the palm grove there. hanging about to us with odds and ends of fellows who were there. And then my sergeant major came along with, he'd been in hospital in Baghdad, and there was a party being put together from people around. And so I joined them, and after that I seemed to stick with him, and we got on till I got into Turkey.
How many guards would each party have?
Oh, they were mounted, about six or seven, no more. They had no worries, we couldn't run anywhere.
Was there bag? You said you were in the Baghdad palm grove.
Yes.
Was it a formal camp, or were you just lying?
No, just in the palm grove, anywhere, lying about. They never bothered with us much. They kept an outside monitoring sentry. But there was, the point was that there was nothing to eat for anybody. There was no point roaming anywhere. The point was to keep together.
Did the rations improve from these biscuits?
No, we used to get this horrible brown black bread, one a day, and cooked food was very, very seldom seen. And in any case, it wasn't much.
So you continued to be hungry?
Yes, but, you know, the people themselves live off their bread mainly. They eat very little meat and that sort of thing. We are entirely different. So we had to gradually get round to that, but of course it affected our stomachs.
Did you see any evidence of brutality by the Turkish guards?
Oh, well, yes, they would come along and give you a wallop, push you into line, you know what I mean. And the great thing was they were always out to try and steal your boots or things like that. You had to hang on to everything. And you couldn't argue with them, of course. But by and large, I think, considering their standards of living and their approach, after all they were Muslim faith, and we were the infidel, you might say. So, they were doing their job as anyone else would do it, I suppose, as they knew it, according to their standards of living.
Did you see much evidence of casualties amongst the prisoners?
Oh, yes, yes. People were going down. Mostly it was with dysentery, was a trouble, great trouble. And you couldn't get much attention. There was no medical facilities with parties going at all.
You didn't have any of your own doctors?
No, nothing like that. I don't know what happened to them. A lot of them, of course, were put in their own hospitals in Baghdad. They were only too glad to have them, you see. And so there it was. And we got on till we got to the first range of mountains after Mosul. And there I was pushed off with a party and took us up over these blooming mountains. An old man and four youngsters in the escort, with about 15 of us, that's all, out of this party. And they chased us up this blessed lot. And when we got to the top, we could see down to in the valley, there was a big powerhouse there. And so we were taken down there, and that's where I first stopped. And in the morning, I was put into a sawmill.
And your dysentery got better by this time?
Yes, it cleared up by degrees. But I think that was due to the bread and nothing else had helped it. Any meat would have been continued to aggravate it. That's the sort of thing. So plain bread was the best thing that could have happened.
So you were by now in a slightly better condition than some of the members of your
yes.
party?
Yes, oh yes. And well, as I say, I was first of all put into this sawmill, working there. And the trains, the Decaville railway was running by that time in the tunnel. and we were splitting this wood for fueling the deck of our trains. There's no coal, you see.
What was the name of this place you
had? Iran.
Not the country, the actual town.
Iran. I-R-A-N, yes. It's a big tunnel there. Blue granite, absolute marvellous rock. It's absolutely blue, sparkling granite. Terrific.
How long did you stay at this spot?
I was there for about a year or more, because the Germans came up eventually and took over the railway right through, you see. And as I say, I was on this timber yard splitting and sawing on a bandsaw, on a circular saw, wood for firing the trains. And when the Germans came, they took over the lot and everything. And they had, of course, most of their own people for the various jobs. And I was lucky. I'd been down to the stream the day before, washed my shirt and my shorts that I had, and I was looking quite clean, really. And they formed up a party. They wanted about a dozen chaps for some special jobs, you see. And came along, and he said, yes, we'll have him, and that was me, and, you know, someone else. And it was my saving, because that was where I really benefit. I was parked with the kitchen staff.
Before we go on to that, can I just ask you a couple of questions about when you were under control of the Turks and working in the sawmill?
Yeah.
The food there, did it continue the same when you settled?
The loaf of bread, each day the big black bread, and some sort of stew at night, cooked meat at that time.
What about, did you have much to drink? What sort of drink did you
have? No drink at all, no, just water. But we, of course, were accustomed to making our own tea, we called it, by burning crusts of bread and put it in boiling water. It colours it, you see.
Did you... there were no sort of canteens or parcels or anything?
No, that was something that never reached us at all. I never had a parcel. I never had a letter.
What was the state of your clothing by this time?
Well, by this time, of course, things were in, pretty worse. I mean, the Germans, this all happened so quickly, I was lucky, and I was given a pair of trousers and a pair of German boots, in other words, from Dead Men's Kit, and I was clothed.
Is this only when the Germans came?
Yes, yeah. Mm. But the Turks didn't give us anything.
What before the Germans arrived, what sort of shelter were you in?
We had no tents or anything. We were out in the open all the time. Never slept under any shelter.
What was the weather like?
Dry, of course, fortunately, that time of year.
And not too cold?
No, well, it was getting cold by the time we got to the mountains.
Did they have any decent sanitary provision for you? Did they sort out...
No, we merely had to just get out a distance away from the crowd and do your business.
What about washing and bathing?
Well, that was all a matter of streams or wherever you were.